Geography. Free space for geography. Extending teaching and learning methods beyond the boundaries of campus.
Did you hear about Frontline?
Frontline,
by the way, has an outstanding production.
Geography Frontline.
Hey, Frontliners, how's it going? Hope you had a great week, and hello to all new listeners to Geography Frontline. If I take a closer look at the stats of subscribers, downloads, and hits, I can clearly see more people tune into the show, and that is a good thing. So welcome everybody to episode 127, where you again have the chance to actively participate and become a producer by sending in voicemail and email feedback, leave comments on our Facebook wall, or participate in Quick Vote and Sound Riddle. There are actually a lot of things you can do to help Frontline become an even better podcast, like answering my call on Facebook from 2 days ago when I asked for your input on stereotypes in children's books. And there were quite a few posts on that topic, and this is exactly what we'll be talking about today: children's books. Children's books. I don't know about you, but I usually have 5 or 6 of them in my hands daily. To read them to my little son, of course. There are a lot of amazing, cute, and funny works out there, but there is also a dark side about children's books. Totally non-PC comments, quotes, pictures, and so on. Like, I was reading a book about construction areas and building sites to Jakob, that's my son's name, and the little ones can find out about how a house is built and what the digger is doing and why you would need a crane and so on. And everything from digging the first hole to installing the toilet and covering the roof. And yeah, the book takes about 8 pages to explain the whole process. That's really interesting for the little ones. And the last 2 pages are spared for A, animals and how they built their homes, and B, about houses and homes in other parts of the world. So, you find 3 examples there on that one page. First one is an igloo of the Eskimos or Inuit. Second one, a Berber tent from northern Africa. And third, a straw hut of black African people. Now, there are some interesting things about this page. First of all examples are rather primitive dwellings, right? Not all people in Morocco live in tents, And not all Inuit in igloos, and not all black Africans in huts. Another aspect is the one of generalization. There are Inuit, there are Berber, and there is this unspecific huge group of black Africans. Like there wouldn't be any cultural diversity going on in the South. Blacks are blacks. That's basically it. Not so great, actually. And the didactic concept of the book. Frontlines, there really is a didactic concept behind this. That even strengthened the impression on the pages with diggers, cranes, and civilized people. You can flip small parts of the page to get inside information. If you flip one piece, you can see inside a house, for example, or behind the digger, or into the case of the plumber, and so on. So conclusion, there is so much to discover. It's really fascinating and exciting. It's amazing. And yeah, ask my little son. Hey, he loves it. Yeah, just to flip this little snippets and see what's behind all that. But take a look at the homes of the other people now. Inside the igloo. What do you find there? An Inuit with a small fire. Not very exciting. And inside the tent, a Berber laying on some carpets. Yeah, of course, they never do anything, these Arabs. And inside the straw hut, that's the straw hut that two black people are fixing. Of course, it's not very stable. There is no door or anything to flip around. Nothing. Totally boring. That's just a hut. You can't even look inside and see what's there. There is nothing there. Now, what should be inside anyway, Jakob usually skips this page and takes a look at the last page of the book. And that's the one with birds, beavers, and other animals. And you know what? Even the smallest woodpecker, get a home that's more interesting than this straw hut. Every one of the animals' homes can be opened and looked into. Amazing! What might sound a little curious and funny in the first place is actually a real problem. If we are getting serious and are talking about perception and about the influence media, in this case children's books, have for shaping our picture of the world.
Children absorb images and values from books implicitly, without thinking about them.
Yeah, that's from a YouTube clip with a librarian. And she describes the exact same thing, that especially children consume media without reflecting critically. Can happen to adults too. Yeah, by the way. So, of course, the book isn't telling lies. There are straw huts. There are igloos. And there are tents where people are living. But these examples are used as the generalized view of countries abroad. And that is the problem. Talking about Africa like it was a country and not a continent, that's problematic and puts stereotypes in people's minds or children's minds that are very persistent. And there can be even racist tendencies in it.
My son, who's now an adult, saw Five Chinese Brothers on the Table and said, "Oh, I love that book." And this is how we feel. We love these books. We remember them nostalgically. But when I told him, "Well, I'm looking at books that have racist images," he just took one look at the cover and he got it completely.
Yeah, but without, just being drawn to that image and being asked to look at it at this special racist perspective, you wouldn't get it because you have that memories of that perfect childhood book you always looked at and you loved it when you were like 3 or 4 years old. And so you have the Chinese or the Turk or the black man. You know what I'm talking about, right? It's stereotypes, and not in a very good way, because stereotypes are not only a bad thing, because they actually can help us to organize the world more easily. If you think about what's his name, Siegfried Krakauer, exactly, Siegfried Krakauer, German philosopher, he wrote about generalization in the detective novel in the 70s. I think it was like 1971. And he said by using generalized and simplified characters, places, and situations, the novel provides society a clearer picture of itself than it would be perceived through the everyday experiences. So, because of stereotypes and generalization, it's easier to view the world like it really is. Half a sentence I just read to you was a quote from a paper I actually co-authored with Dr. Stefan Zimmermann from University of Osnabrück on sound and the cognitive construction of world in popular audio plays. And if you want to take a look at that, you can find a reference to it in the show notes. And I would argue that we need a certain amount of generalization and stereotypization to deconstruct the world and not getting overwhelmed by all the unfiltered information out there. But the problem with stereotypes is that they are easily reproduced in media like children's books, and that they are most likely pimped or radicalized to make them more memorable. So So let's switch categories and jump right into the next section with updates from our Facebook page. Here's everything you need to know about Frontline on Facebook. Yet, and to continue with the main topic of the show, there are other examples of children's books, also comic books, that are absolutely racist from a 21st century point of view. Take some stories of Tintin, Tim und Struppi for the German listeners, for example. Tintin. If you read the original version of Tintin in the Congo, you get a pretty good idea about it. Steffen posted a BBC article about it on Facebook. So feel free to go ahead and read it on facebook.com/geography. And you can find a reference to it in this week's show notes. And there are more posts on Facebook about the issue. There's Stefan Z, and he posted a link from the Telegraph's article called From Horrible Histories to Babar the Elephant, the offensive children's books withdrawn by libraries. Quite worth a read. So take a closer look to get an idea. And finally, Stefan Hatzel, he says, Hachi Brachi Luftballon. And he refers to a children's book first published in 1904 about the Turk. Evil, memorable nose, huge turban. Also, totally worth looking at. The more I think about it, the clearer it is to me that we have to do a quick vote about this topic. Ha! The question for this week's quick vote is the following. Stereotypes in children's books. A. Important to understand the world. B. Racist and totally outdated. Or answer C. Another opinion. So go ahead and participate in this week's quick vote. You can find the link to the quick vote on the current episode site, the show notes, and on Facebook for sure. The quick votes from episodes 125 and 26, 126 aren't forgotten. They are still open and will be discussed in the next Frontline episode. So, to pick a song related to this week's topic was kind of easy, really. There were numerous hits for something about kids, so I picked this one. That's a song from Peephole, and it's called Children's Show. You're working on a cruise line as a dancer in a Disney show. I sit by the register, done 100,000 bottles of low. I never thought, oh, you'd ever find me a dick. Clearance Show from Peephole, from the album Strawberry Told Me, from the Podsafe Music Network. You find that on music.meview.com, and it's not available on the iTunes store, neither in the US nor the German one, but you can find the link to the song on YouTube and listen to the song, and if you want to just download the song from YouTube or whatever, if that's legal. I put the link in this week's show notes. Interesting. I mean, this section is all about raising our auditive awareness, right? And listen to an urban sound that we try to name. Not always so easy. To give you a stimulus to send in your suggestion, we started a t-shirt competition some episodes ago. And I have to say, after massive feedback for the first sound riddle, there's usually no one left to comment on this section. No one else than Geographer. And yeah, Geographer, he already got 2 points on his way to the magic number of 5 for winning the shirt. And this week, he again is the only one who sent in a suggestion for the sound riddle of episode 126. And here it comes. I think that wasn't too hard to guess, right? Here's what Geographer wrote. Hello, frontliners. Hello, Torsten. First, thank you, Beate, for the nice background noise level map of San Francisco. And hey, who did this piece of crap, this map? Have you seen the color ramp? For sure, this wasn't a Geographer. Hey, just a short comment on this one. That's a good point, really. Colors are kind of important to read a map, right? And going from yellow to brown to green to blue to violet, well, that doesn't make any sense. You would always presume that colors getting darker. If they're getting darker, the higher the decibel level, if you're talking about a noise map. But yellow, brown, green? Give me a break. Okay, good observation, Geographer, about the topic we talked about last episode and Beata's post about this San Francisco noise map. Very great one. So, what about the sound riddle? So, he says, sound riddle. Sound riddle. Football fans in a stadium cheering for their team. And for the American listeners, soccer. Best wishes, Geographer. And this sound indeed comes from a football stadium and from football fans cheering in a stadium. So this means that Geographer gained his 3rd point. Congratulations. And now it's 3-4 Geographer, 1 for Judith, and that's about it. And I have to make a confession. I totally forgot to tell you what the sound riddle was all about last week. Right? Geographer noticed that and he says, hey, you didn't solve the last sound riddle. What was it? I have no clue about it for the... only that was the machine doing something and moving something on, etc. And I'm curious about it. Okay, what can I say? Okay, I think I've forgotten to mention what caused this sound. This actually is a husker for asparagus. Yeah, that's right. Recorded on the farmer's market in Wiesbaden. You can bring your asparagus to get it peeled. €1 per kilo. Takes about 20 seconds. Not too bad, huh? And one last word about the shirts. If you're still struggling with sending in a comment, take a look at the Geography shop. Go to geography.com and click on the shop button, or simply follow the link in the show notes to get an idea how these shirts look like. Not all of the shirts available right now will be up when the competition is over, so probably in about 2 weeks if Geographer keeps up the pace and just nails the next 2 sound riddles. But as you know, this podcast switched its language from German to English, and so some products are phasing out. They got the German logo. There was still the front line written in a different kind of style, like it is now, and all these things. And there actually is a new product today, And I'll talk about that in a second. But before that, we have to listen to this week's sound riddle, right? Remember, if you have any idea what this could be, send me an email to comment@geogfree.com and the correct answers will be awarded 1 point for the shirt competition. So, listen up. What could cause such a sound? And now, more about the shirts. There is a new shirt available in the Geogfree shop. It's green, like the Frontline logo. It got a QR code on it, leading everybody who scans you right to the Frontline website. It says Geogfree and the network is us, our tagline, right? And it has a nice quote from Hildegard Westerkamp written on it, saying, "Lead your ears away from your own sounds and listen to the sounds nearby." Available for men and women for just €14.99, and everything on the shirt isn't just printed in white on green. The tagline, the QR code, and even the quote, everything glows in the dark. It is time again for another episode of Alexander von Humboldt's voyage to the Americas. He is in the Caribbean right now, exploring the islands. So, let's see. Hospitality in the Spanish colonies is such that the European who arrives without recommendation or pecuniary means is almost sure of finding assistance if he lands in any port on account of sickness. The Catalonians, the Galicians, and the Biscayans have the most frequent intercourse with America. They there form, as it were, three distinct corporations, which exercise a remarkable influence over the morals, the industry, and commerce of the colonies. The poorest inhabitant of Seges, or Vigo, is sure of being received into the house of a Catalonian or Galician pulpero, that's a retail dealer, whether he lands in Chile or the Philippine Islands. So he is talking about hospitality in the South America and in South America. And by mentioning the Catalonians and Galicians, we are reminded that it's not a Native Americans helping the Europeans out, right? It's more or less Europeans, because we're talking about colonies, yeah? And colonization of South America. So just keep that in mind. And then he goes on, and now you really have to keep in mind when this was written. It was in 1799, not in just like 2012 or so. He says, "Among the sick who landed at Cumana was a Negro, who fell into a state of insanity a few days after our arrival. He died in that deplorable condition, though his master, almost 70 years old, who had left Europe to settle at San Blas at the entrance of the Gulf of California, had attended him with the greatest care. I relate this fact as affording evidence that man born under the torrid zone, after having dwelt in temperate climates, sometimes feel the pernicious effects of the heat of the tropics. The Negro was a young man, 18 years of age, very robust and born on the coast of Guinea, and abode of some years on the high plain of Castile, had imparted to his organization that kind of irritability which renders a miasma of the torrid zone so dangerous to the inhabitants of the countries of the north." So Humboldt is talking race now, right? And that's absolutely understandable from the scientific context he is coming from. In 1799, we are far away from focusing on social groups and individual lifestyles. And we haven't reached geographical studies on race yet and not even thought about cultural continents, like Ewald Banse did in his text, what's it called, Orient, in 1907, I think it was 08. So this is still describing what you see and explaining the world based on your scientific education. So always keep that in mind when reading texts from another era. The historic context is always very, very important.
It's a four-letter word. I prepare you for that. Jobs, jobs, and jobs.
Here comes our relatively new section about jobs, internships, and permanent positions, all related to geography. Magdalena takes a look at all the job offers available worldwide. She does nothing else the whole week. and picks one for every Frontline episode. Amazing. So let's hear what she found out for 127. Hello, Frontliners. This is Magdalena. Are you interested in humanitarian work? Médecins Sans Frontières is looking for interns for their office in Bonn, in Germany. During the two-month internship, you will mainly organize and evaluate information events. You should be fluent in English and German, and you'll find more details in the PDF document. Good luck, Magdalena. Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Magdalena. That sounds amazing. And I'll post a link to the... No, I think I'll just have to upload the PDF file on our Facebook site, because there actually isn't a link to that. She just sent me the PDF. So I sent it to you via Facebook. You can take a look at it and apply for that job. Job offer, internship, in 2 month duration in Bonn. Second announcements for today's episode. This time it's for an international conference talking about place in Turkey from Saturday 23rd to Wednesday 27th of June 2012. And here are the details for this INSPIRE conference. With the introduction of the INSPIRE Directive 2007/2, the policy landscape for sharing environmental information has changed drastically. The Commission communication on the Shared Environmental Information Systems, ZEISS 2008, and follow-up activities at national and European levels have further helped to cultivate a new vision for a coordinated framework for the implementation and monitoring of environmental policies. The governance, content, and supporting technologies are the three pillars with which the vision can be consolidated and implemented. The aim of this year's INSPIRE conference is therefore to look at how innovations in these three areas have further shaped the landscape of sharing environmental information. So, if you're interested in environmental policies and would love to spend some days in the amazing city of Istanbul, this conference is for you. So, here we are at the official sign-off of episode 127. Send me your thoughts on this week's topics. Pick your phone and leave your comments on the Skype voicemail. Skype name is Geography. Participate in the quick vote, the sound riddle, and so on. Have a great week, frontliners. And say it with me now. The network is us.